Long before the church had pulpits and play spaces, she had dinner tables and kitchens. Every meal mattered, and Jesus pointed the way. Everyone was welcome when Jesus sat at a table. From VIPs to traders, from religious leaders to shame-filled sinners, from those in the margins to those at the top, he ate with them all. And every meal became a peek into his new ways of living and new ways of loving. After all, why did Jesus come? He came to serve, to give his life, and to seek and save the lost. And how did he come? He came eating and drinking. What we learn at the table with Jesus is what we need for our tables today.
Hey, before we dive in, let me just say that I am so grateful for all of you who share some of your time with me, with us in these messages, whether you're hanging out in Tyrone, Lewistown, or Milheim, or you're connecting in California, Kansas, the Carolinas, Minnesota, Myanmar, or even all over Pennsylvania. One day we will have far more time to connect, and I'd love to hear your stories. But for now, I just want to say thanks. So here's my opening question for this teaching. Have you ever been hungry? Now, I'm not talking about that feeling that some of you get halfway through my sermon where you think, oh my goodness, when is this going to be done? I can't wait to go to the waffle shop or whatever restaurant you go to. I've got a kid or two who is famous for getting hangry and get the food out, get the Chick-fil-A delivery going. It is time to eat. Get out of my way. Have you ever been hungry? I'm talking beyond stomach growling, beyond intermittent fasting that you choose, even beyond ketosis, real hunger. How many of us have ever experienced real hunger? I fasted. 40 days is the longest I've gone. I even went without coffee for 40 days once. But I'm talking about a hunger that is forced on you, not one you choose for health or even spiritual reasons or a cleanse. I mean, come on. We are one of the few cultures on the face of the earth that can open a fridge filled with food and complain that we got nothing to eat. Multiple sources, in fact, suggest that we waste 30 to 40% of our food every year, 80 to 100 billion pounds of food wasted. You got to understand, Jesus lived in a different world, one that understood hunger in a more immediate, unchosen kind of way. Well, one author suggested a significant reason why Jesus started his ministry with 40 days of fasting was so that he could better identify with the people that he would serve, a people who were intimately familiar with gnawing constant hunger. So when his disciples asked Jesus to teach them how to pray, what was the first request? Give us today our daily bread. I mean, today we have to turn bread into a metaphor. Like daily bread represents whatever I need for today. So God, give us today what we need for today. But in those days, what they needed for the day was just bread. Now, why am I making a big deal out of this as we start? Because as we study the meals of Jesus, I just want us to have some sense of what it might have meant to people in Jesus' day to have a seat at the table, to be invited to lunch. I mean, and beyond what awe and wonder it might have raised in their hearts when they heard Jesus say, I'm the bread of life. Those who come to me will never hunger again. In other words, Jesus was saying to them, I am more than enough. More than enough. So welcome to Calvary. Together we are on a journey to trust the more than enoughness of Jesus. As we've been looking at a series of meals with Jesus, and you've heard me say, if I had a tagline for this series, it would probably be, Jesus never met a table he didn't like. I mean, it seems like he just had this way of turning every table into sacred space, every meal into an encounter with God. And maybe none of the meals fit that description any more than the one that we're looking at today. And I hope we leave this lunch message, this message saturating our souls, that when it comes to God's table, there's always room. There is always room. There's always a seat at the table for you. Those words define the hospitality heart of God. There's always room at his table, in his house. And in fact, you know what? In his family, there's more than enough love, more than enough life, more than enough grace, even more than enough food. Because of Jesus, you have more than enough. In fact, before we dive into lunch, let me start where we will end. Because see, Jesus not only has more than enough, he is more than enough. And he loves you more than you know. Listen, I'm talking to you. He loves you more than you know. The Spirit of God is hovering over the chaos of your life, working above and beyond you in ways you can't see and can't even imagine. And whether you find yourself in the updraft of a great season right now, or you are so weary of a hard and seemingly hopeless, hungry time, telling you the best is yet to come, because there is more of Jesus for you. There is more than enough Jesus for every hunger of your heart and every hope of your life. He's more than enough. So let's get to lunch. This meal, this lunch, this is the only lunch that ends up in all four Gospels. In fact, other than the resurrection, this is the only miracle in all four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, which simply means it kind of mattered. This lunch is a big deal. I think it's a big deal because it gives us all kinds of insight into Jesus and into our journeys as Jesus' apprentices. Now, I'm going to focus, we've been looking at Luke, but I'm going to focus on John's rendition of the story, and I'm going to start with Matthew because Matthew adds some really important context. So we're starting in Matthew chapter 14, verses 13 through 16, and here's what it says. When Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. Hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from all the towns around. And when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them and healed their sick. As evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a remote place and it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so that they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food." Jesus replied, "They don't need to go away. You give them something to eat." Says, as soon as Jesus heard the news, he wanted to be alone. Now, we got to ask, what was the news? Well, the news was really hard stuff. That morning, Jesus woke to a report about the murder of his cousin, probably good friend, John the Baptist. Now, John the Baptist was killed by King Herod as a gift for his niece, who is actually the daughter of his brother's wife, with whom he was having an affair. What a mess. And probably now Herod is after Jesus as well. It's a time, it's a day, it's a moment of great hope-draining uncertainty, a time of loss, and Jesus is struggling, grieving, discouraged, maybe even a bit angry because he was human like that. And he just kind of realizes he needs to get away and clear his head, get alone with God and pray. What he needs to do is regain the Father's perspective on his circumstances, what's going on in his life. Man, I don't know what you're going through right now, but I can tell you what I do know is that life is not nearly so uncertain from God's perspective. Jesus was trying to get alone, but he couldn't get away from the crowd. And honestly, it's not all that different today. We can work our church systems and systematize our programs. We can give you tools to love your neighbors and resource your donuts in the driveway. But I'm telling you, when Jesus shows up, you can't keep the people away. In the Gospels, it seems like Jesus almost always drew a crowd. You realize that Gen Z is one of the most spiritually open generations in decades, but they're also one of the most skeptical of the church, more skeptical of the church than previous generations. And I don't know, I kind of think about that and I wonder, perhaps the reason they're skeptical of us, of the church, is because they're just not sure that we know where to find Jesus. Jesus got out of the boat. He's in the boat trying to get away from the crowd, but the crowd followed him. So he got out of the boat. He saw the crowd and it says he had compassion on them. I love the Greek word that Matthew uses here. He uses the word splagnitzomai. Splagnitzomai. He uses that to describe this compassion that Jesus had when he saw the crowd. And that word literally means a sensation in the guts. Like this was a heartbreaking, gut-wrenching kind of compassion. Not just a silent tweaking of the soul like, oh, I feel bad about that. More like groans of anguish, compelling action. He didn't just have compassion, he was moved with compassion. I think too often we just have compassion. There is mess in our neighborhoods into which we will never step if we aren't moved with compassion. You understand, Jesus has more than enough heart. He has more than enough heart to go around for you and your neighbors and the people in your workplace and your friends and your family. He has more than enough heart to help you go on when the going on is so hard, when the people in your life are so hard. Jesus was moved with compassion because people matter to God, all people. Every label we can devise, every identity we choose, every sin represented, every brokenness imagined, every prideful, I've got it under control, self-sufficient, don't need you, person on your hashtag. People who wear their brokenness on the outside and people who hide it on the inside. Lost people who ridicule your faith. Jesus says, I want you to see them. He saw them. Remember last week, Jesus is a seer. He sees people and he wants us to see them. He wants us to see them through his eyes. Sheep without a shepherd. That's how Jesus described them in Mark's gospel and in this story. They were like sheep without a shepherd, Jesus said, and the shepherd of their soul saw them and he was moved with compassion. The disciples, on the other hand, as night comes around, as evening comes, they're asking Jesus to send them away. Get rid of the people, Jesus. Enough is enough, and we don't have enough. Send them away so they can get food and rest. Jesus, we need a break. See, Jesus saw people, and he was moved with compassion. The disciples saw need. They saw deep need and brokenness and too much, and they looked away. And you know, ultimately, it's hard to love people that we don't see. Just like it's hard to love your neighbors if you don't know their names. It's hard to love our neighbors if we never see their faces. And in fact, go beyond their faces into the deep places, the deep needs of their hearts, of their relationships, of their homes, of their workplace. Listen, sight is so important. So just ask yourself this morning, who do I see in my neighborhood? Who do I see in my neighborhood? The next time, maybe it's today, the next time you drive through your neighborhood or walk through the hall of your apartment, count 10 homes, count 10 doors. The statistics say that more than 8 out of every 10 doors are not connected to any church. 5 out of 10 homes with a family has a marriage headed towards a divorce or already there. 2 out of 3 out of every 10 homes has a child who has been or is being sexually abused. And Jesus just says, I want them to be seen. I want you to see them through my heart. They're not projects or political labels or enemies. They're people, sheep without a shepherd, and I love them. You know, this is why we do Serve Week, May 20th through the 28th. In part, we do Serve Week so that we can go out and see people, love and serve people, so that people know that they are seen by God. We become living proof of a loving God. We're not even to the lunch yet, so let's move to John's gospel. In John chapter 6, verses 1 through 7, here's what it says. Jesus soon saw a huge crowd of people coming to look for him, turning to Philip, that's one of his disciples, turning to one of his teammates. He asks him, where can we buy bread to feed all these people? Now, he was testing Philip. We find this later on. He was testing Philip, for he already knew what he was going to do. And Philip replied, even if we worked for months, we wouldn't have enough money to feed them. Like, what good is what I got with all this need, Jesus? Even if I gave everything I had for months, I could not meet the need of this one moment. Have you ever felt that way? What good is what I have with all the need around me? What good is that? I mean, when I think of all the people in our valleys that need love and help, I think of a family that just lost their son, another family broken by divorce. I think of a young woman wrestling with depression and a pastor, the second one I've talked to in the last few weeks, who's ready to quit. I think of people struggling with opioid addictions and financial difficulties and marriages that are as dry as sand and just loneliness and anxiety and children who do not have a forever family. And when we think of the need, man, it is easy to think if all I have to give is all there isn't enough. And if there isn't enough, then I don't know, Jesus, maybe I should just hang on. Maybe I should conserve what I have, because if there's just not enough, well, there's not enough. Jesus is testing Philip. And I think under his breath, I think Jesus is saying, come on, Philip. Don't let a scarcity mentality drain your heart or blind your eyes. Don't let a scarcity mentality drain your heart or blind your eyes. Don't let what you think you don't have keep you from seeing. Don't let what you think you can't get keep you from loving. See, a scarcity mentality blinds our eyes, but when we come to the point of realizing that we don't have enough, if we will lift our eyes to the resources of God, of Jesus, we discover that Jesus has more than enough stuff. He's got more than enough love, but he's also got more than enough stuff. Jesus was testing Philip because he already knew what he was going to do. He was going to reveal his power and his heart. But first, a little test. Philip, and listen, we face this test daily. It's like Jesus is prepping us for a miracle. Philip, where can we get bread to feed all these people? Jesus, it would take a small fortune that we don't have. Jesus is asking from an attitude of abundance, and Phil is answering with a mentality of scarcity. Jesus is asking a faith question, where can we get this done? And Philip is given a how are we going to do it, can't be done kind of response. And think about this. I wonder how often we miss, how often you've missed Christ's invitation to join him in a miracle because we think he's leaving the solution up to us. He's telling us what to do, but he's leaving it all up to us. And so we count our coins and we strategize our plans and we work up our gumption only to realize we ain't got enough. God, we don't have enough. Jesus invites us into a miracle and we reduce it to logistics. How are we going to pay for this? Are there enough volunteers? Where will we find them? How will I find the time, the heart, the energy to just keep going? We're never going to get it done. Jesus is looking for a yes, and all we got is a yeah, but. And see, I don't know. I think Jesus was hoping Philip would say, well, I don't know. Let's see, Jesus. I watched you turn 6 pots of water into 768 bottles of fine wine. I was there when you healed that guy's son with just a word, long distance. There was that guy at the pool, crippled for decades. He didn't even know that you were you, but you healed him, and he walked. So let's see, where are we going to buy bread? I don't know. You tell me. Jesus, you just tell me what you want me to do, because I'm pretty sure you got this, and I just want to join you in what you're doing. I just want to be around to see it happen, because Jesus, you're more than enough. That's what I think Jesus was hoping Philip would say. And can I tell you, God is still looking for people who believe that Jesus is more than enough, that Jesus has more than enough compassion to see every need and more than enough stuff to meet every need, and he'll help you do the same. Now, don't hear what I'm not saying. He wants us to use our strategies and our resources and our creativity and recruit the people, but all the while realizing that he can make our not enough so much more than enough. And that's what it's like to be living life at his table. Look at John chapter 6 as we continue on, verses 8 through 11. It says, then Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. He said, there's a young boy here with 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. Honestly, I think Andrew is joking around. Like, what good is that with this huge crowd? And Jesus responds like, good job. tell everyone, that's it. Tell everyone to sit down, Jesus ordered. And so all of them, the men alone numbered 5,000, so not counting women and children, 5,000 men. They all sat down on the grassy slopes. And then Jesus took the loaves. He gave thanks to God. He broke them and passed them out to the people. And afterwards, he did the same with the fish, and they all ate until they were full. And Jesus has more than enough. He sets the table, and he gives us a seat at the table for the world's greatest miracle. He's the true model of the hospitality heart of God. But every once in a while, I mean, think about this, Mark, because you've run across it too. Every once in a while, we run across someone else who's joining Jesus in his more than enough journey. We catch a glimpse of Jesus in the hospitality heart of someone else at the table. Like this kid with 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. We actually don't know very much about him. In fact, John's the only one who even mentions that he existed. But we know this, barley was the bread of the poor. At that time, it was the cheapest grain you could buy. This is a poor community. He's not just a young boy. He's a poor, young, hungry boy with a sack lunch. I mean, just picture this scene. Think about it for a moment. This is all he has. If he doesn't bring this home, maybe his whole family goes hungry. My guess is that in this crowd of thousands of people, there are at least a few others who could have given even more. And when they ask him for his food, he's being asked to give all that he has so that someone else can eat. We don't know his name. All I know is that other than Jesus, This is the only one who's willing to actually do something. This kid has no idea he's on the verge of a miracle, no idea that Jesus is going to take his poor boy sandwich and turn it into a feast for thousands. In fact, I imagine him looking around at thousands of hungry people and just thinking, yeah, but this is not enough. I don't have enough for this great need. It was all he had, but all he had was so little. But at the table of Jesus, I'm telling you, small acts of sacrificial generosity become the seeds of awesome. You have enough to give. Luke tells us that Jesus sent the disciples into the crowd, putting them in groups of 50. So imagine the disciples go out, 5,000 men, add in the women and children, and you have hundreds and hundreds of groups of 50 people. Jesus took the happy meal, gave thanks, began to break off pieces. He produced the food and the disciples distributed. You understand, it's still the same. He's in production. We're in distribution. Can you picture Team Jesus? I mean, he fills their hands. They distribute the food and come back and stand in line. And he fills their hands. They distribute the food, come back and stand over and over and over again until everyone has eaten all they could eat. Not just a little taste, all they could eat. And when everyone was full, they gathered 12 baskets of leftovers, one for each of the disciples. You know, so often we think it takes something big to do something big. But at Jesus' table, it's small that gives birth to big. In the kingdom, it's small that gives birth to big. It's a sack lunch that gives birth to a feast for thousands. And I just got to pause here and tell you a couple of stories, because this point, I just feel like this point needs to land in our hearts today. A few years ago, a story in Christianity Today told of a Muslim man who made a commitment to follow Isa al-Masih, Jesus the Messiah. Surprisingly, a rather small, ordinary miracle caused him to open his heart to Jesus. He described the miracle in his own words. He said, "One night, the only food my wife and I had, the only food we had was a small portion of macaroni. My wife prepared it very nicely. Then a friend of hers knocked on the door. I told myself the macaroni is not enough for even two of us. So how could it be enough for three of us? But because it is our custom, we opened the door." Their custom was hospitality. So they opened the door and she came in to eat with us. And while we were eating, he said, the macaroni started to multiply. It became full in the bowl. In fact, he said, I suspected something was wrong with my eyes, so I started rubbing them. I thought maybe my wife hid some macaroni under the small table, and so I checked, but there was nothing there. My wife and I looked at each other, but because of our guest, we said nothing. He said, that night as I slept, Isa, Jesus, came to me and asked, "Do you know who multiplied the macaroni?" And I said, in my dream, I said, I don't know. And he said, "I am Isa al-Masih, Jesus the Messiah. And if you follow me, not only the macaroni, but your life will be multiplied." They invited a neighbor in whom they couldn't afford to feed. And through that small act of generosity, he encountered Jesus. Small gives birth to big. I shared the story of Toby a few months ago at XYM at our youth meeting. When Toby was in high school, he wrote an essay on world hunger and ended up winning a 2-week trip study tour in Africa through World Vision. And he got there and Toby was struck by the beauty and the poverty of Ethiopia. But when he got back home, there was one picture that dominated his mind. He just couldn't get rid of it. It was a picture of one day at a World Vision distribution camp. He was handing out food and supplies and playing with some of the kids. And as Toby and the others were getting ready to leave, this little 11-year-old boy came up and tapped him on the shoulder. He was staring at Toby's t-shirt. And then this little boy looked down at his own shirt and it was worn and thin and full of holes. And he looked back at Toby and he asked him shyly for Toby's shirt. "Could I have your shirt?" Toby was just, he wasn't prepared for that request. His luggage was a day away. Fair skin minus t-shirt plus African sun was not a very good equation. And so he shrugged his shoulder, shook his head no, and stepped on the bus. But from that moment on, Toby just couldn't get that picture out of his mind. Back home, it was even worse when he counted how many t-shirts he had. So he started a t-shirt drive called Give the Shirt Off Your Back. He went door to door collecting t-shirts, persuaded stores to put out collection bins. Local media picked up the story and it went viral. And in a few months, he collected over 10,000 shirts. Now, how does a high school student get 10,000 shirts to Ethiopia? He called one relief agency after another. Same answer. Sorry, can't help. Too expensive. UPS would do it for a mere $65,000. Finally, he connected with an organization called Supporters of Sub-Sahara Africa, and they just happened to be taking a shipment of supplies to Africa, and they could take Toby's shirts along for the ride. Just one hitch, they could only go to one African country, Ethiopia. Listen, don't let the size of the need keep you from giving the little that you have. You just don't know. Who knows how God will multiply it for good? But we have to be willing to give the little we have. See, we can't expect all-in benefits with a casual commitment. Rarely will God do what he does if we're not willing to do what he asks, even if it means giving all we have. There's something gloriously biblical about small beginnings, but small beginnings do not equal a casual commitment. And if we go all in with our little, look at John 6, verses 12 through 14, it says, after everyone was full, Jesus told his disciples, now gather the leftovers so nothing is wasted. And so they picked up the pieces, filled 12 baskets with scraps left by the people who had eaten from the 5 barley loaves. And when the people saw him do this miraculous sign, they exclaimed, surely he's the prophet we've been expecting. When we give Jesus all we have, even the leftovers are more than enough. A crowd of, who knows, probably 15,000 plus people were fed that day. Now, I used to wonder what happened to the leftovers. In fact, I used to think, I hope each one of those disciples marched those 12 baskets to the home of that kid who offered hospitality to a crowd of people. But you know what? Then I think about it more and I realize it doesn't really matter who got the leftovers, does it? Because ultimately that day wasn't about food. It wasn't even about being part of a miracle that would be talked about for thousands of years. It was about being invited to sit at the table with Jesus. The best part was Jesus. That was the day he met Jesus and found that Jesus not only has more than enough, he is more than enough to satisfy the deepest hunger of our hearts. And in the end, he invites us all. He invites each and every one of us, all of us, to come to the table. You are invited to come to the table. Today, as we celebrate communion, listen to me. You are invited to come to his table. I suppose it shouldn't be a surprise that the next day, that same crowd went looking for Jesus again, right? 12 baskets of leftovers last night. Hey, what's for breakfast today, Jesus? And when they found him, he told them, you've come looking for me, not because you saw God in my actions, but because you were hungry and I fed you. But there is better food. There's a better food. And then in John chapter 6, verse 35, he says to them, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will not hunger, and whoever believes in me will never thirst. So I go back to the question we started with. Have you ever been hungry? Desperately hungry. And now I'm talking about soul hungry. To every Gen Zer desperate for peace, to every man or woman sprinting into the destruction of a midlife crisis, to those who have climbed the ranks of life and found there's really nothing at the top, to those who want to make a difference in their neighborhood, workplace, school, or family, but you just don't believe you have enough to do what it takes. Listen, Jesus is more than enough. He is the bread of life, and he is more than enough. And in the end, we're all hungry. We just don't all know what will satisfy our hungry. We don't know that what our souls seek, what our hearts crave, and what will nourish our lives is Jesus, Jesus only, Jesus alone, and Jesus is more than enough. I'm not merely saying he can do more than enough for you, whatever you're going through, or that he has more than enough to meet every need. I'm saying he is in and of himself more than enough. I am saying that if you have Jesus and nothing else, you have more than enough. He's the first and the last, the creator and sustainer of all creation, the bridegroom of the church, treasure of our faith. Compared to him, everything else, Paul says, is like month-old garbage. What we need is more Christ, and He is more than enough. We need to become students of Jesus, friends of Jesus, passionate apprentices of Jesus. We need to dive so deep into Jesus that people can't find us without rubbing shoulders with Him. He is the bread of life, and He is more than enough. So the question is, am I willing to stop filling up on spiritual junk food and let my soul be satisfied by Jesus? Am I willing to seek a glorious, gut-wrenching hunger for Christ? This is the most important request of a life that thrives. God, give me more Jesus. In fact, that's the essence of communion. It's presence. The presence of Jesus. In fact, there are some traditions that believe that the body and the blood, the bread and the cup actually become the real presence of Jesus. And whether you view it as symbolic or real, Jesus is here in this moment, wherever you're gathered, wherever you sit, wherever you're listening, He's here and He's more than enough. He's more than enough life for the hunger of your soul. He's more than enough grace for every failure, more than enough love for every loneliness, more than enough peace for every anxiety, more than enough wholeness for every area of brokenness. And today, as we celebrate communion, communion is an opportunity to sit at the table with Jesus, to ask Him for a taste of the bread of life that will satisfy the hunger of our hearts. So I'm going to ask you to take the bread. It represents His body broken for you. And take the cup. It represents His lifeblood poured out for the forgiveness of your sins. And as you eat it, and as you drink it, I'm going to encourage you to tell Him thank you and ask Him for more of Him.